entertainer, and entrepreneur answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Larry Adams, Nostradamus, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
Tax deadline Tuesday, Central Florida. I guess that's just a little redundant. Like you can trust a liberal. Thank you, Lord, for the rain that helps wash this cursed oak pollen down the drains and into the ocean. The American Adversaries are here live for the next hour to ensure your drive time home is a safe and exciting one. Larry Adams here in the Mercury Free Studio, thanks to AM660 The Answer. Will Oscar Pistorius win an Oscar for his performance as Blade Crier? I'm sorry, Blade Runner. It's obvious you murdered your gorgeous girlfriend, but would you please stop blubbering? We have John Boehner for that. Our host is no crybaby. He loves taking it from liberals so he can dish much more out. Christopher Hart!
All right. Thanks very much, Lair Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us on this. The storms are gone, but still wet Tuesday afternoon, so be careful if you're out there on the roads. That's right, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries in Drive Time on AM 660 The Answer. And just like Lair said, we are coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. For the best in mercury-free dentistry, call Dr. James E. Hardy at 407-678-3399. And we got a great show lined up for you today. We have Captain Jeff Strucker, who's going to be on the show with us. He's written a book called The Road to Unafraid. That's part of the reason why we're having him on the show, but we're also having him on because he is a great friend and one-time fellow ranger with our dear friend, Colonel Danny McKnight.
Who will be here Thursday.
Who will be here Thursday. That's right. You're not going to want to miss that. And then Peck F.A. Positano afterward. But Jeff Strucker is a fellow that I had the opportunity to meet when OS-91, our great friends Ed and Mary Ganster, did their annual tribute dinner to first responders. This year it was focused to military. And it's just a fascinating life. This man has seen combat action in Panama, Somalia, of course, Black Hawk Down, and also in Afghanistan and Iraq. And in Iraq, it was Operation Desert Storm and Operation Desert Freedom. So twice, two different operations in Iraq. And today, he's a pastor.
Hmm.
In a church in Columbus, Georgia. So we're going to try to follow his life's path, if you will, to see how he got from point A to point B. It's a fascinating story, and we invite you to join us at 407-774-8255. And Nostradamus will be joining us later on, too. And I don't want to spend a lot of time, but you mentioned old Pistorius there. And I can tell by listening to the guy he's lying. Okay.
Everybody's saying that, Chris. It's like so
you do not,
blatant.
You do not have to see him. I'm sure his body language is telltale.
Now, you know why he didn't want to appear on camera?
Yeah, exactly. Because the guy's full of it. And
you can't fight the facts.
And at least
the evidence.
Exactly. And at least the expressions I've seen on the judge's face, who's a woman, tell me that she's not buying it. And so
what a strange custom they have there. When the prosecutor, who's a man, asks him a question, he says, yes, ma'am, and because he has to address the judge, who is a female.
Exactly.
Not the prosecutor who's asking the question.
But it looks like the case is slowly...
Yes, m'lady, I'm sorry.
Slowly, yeah, m'lady. Slowly progressing, but I believe the judge will make the right decision. We'll see. We will see.
Well, the question is going to be what they give him. Will it be first degree or something? But, man, that's after two other times he fired a gun in public that...
I can't see it being personally anything but first-degree murder, but I don't know all the facts. All I know is the guy's a lousy actor, that's for sure.
Not going to get an Oscar, is he, Chris?
So to speak.
Yeah, those boys in the prisons there are going to get an Oscar.
Yeah, so does. Yeah, I wonder if they'll let him take those blades with him into the joint. Anyway, today is tax deadline day. It is the 15th. If you haven't done it yet, you got till midnight now, but your options are only now. It used to be you had several options around town, but nowadays the only place that's going to take your mail after 5 o'clock and get that postmark on it for today will be down at the airport. The airport processing center is the only place now that's open till midnight on tax day. And
ooh, what a drive.
It's a drive down there. I used to make it every year. I would make the ritual to whatever post. First it was the downtown post office till they closed that one on tax day. Then it was Winter Park till they closed that one on tax day. And then it was down at the airport until I quit doing taxes. But you still have until midnight. Get out there and do it. And hopefully your ID, or of course you can do it online. Now that's if you're mailing it. That's the old-fashioned way. If you're doing it online, you still have until midnight to get it.
But that's dangerous.
It is. It is. There's, as a matter of fact, that's what an article I wanted to refer to for a few minutes here. Today's Wall Street Journal by Justin Gelfand. He is a former federal prosecutor who used to handle tax cases. And he worked in the Justice Department Tax Division. And stolen identity refund fraud is a huge problem and growing. The Treasury Department estimates that over the next 5 years, the IRS is going to give out $21 billion in fraudulent refunds. And the way this is normally done is it's an ID theft mm-hmm. thing. You know, these people who steal people's IDs will go in. Normally it's done early in the tax season, so most of it's probably already happened by now. But they will go in and they will file your return for you. The only thing is they'll put their address on it, basically.
For the return.
For the return, for the refund, and they will file a fraudulent return. And then, of course, you are stuck with the nightmare of trying to prove to the IRS, whose burden of proof is already on you in that relationship, that
you're guilty until you can prove yourself innocent.
Exactly. Basically, the IRS is whatever they say goes unless proven otherwise. And so it is an absolute nightmare for people who have gone through this sort of thing. And what this fella says is it would be fairly easy for the IRS to police this. In other words, prevent it from happening before it happens. They're fairly good at finding out what happened. Last year, they prosecuted almost 880 people, but that's out of perhaps thousands who've been doing it. And this is being it's a computer fraud crime. The more sophisticated the hacker is, the easier it is for them to get away with it. And the way they do it now is they have the money downloaded onto prepaid credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's not really in a bank account. It doesn't have to necessarily be mailed anywhere. It's all done electronically. And then they take the prepaid credit card and go out and have a ball with it.
And really, when you think about it, the vendors that take the credit card, they're not on the line. They got their money.
As far as they know, it's a legit transaction. And he says what the IRS can do is a lot of these people who perpetrate this crime, they don't do it once. In other words, they do it dozens or hundreds of times. Exactly. And they'll use the same address over and over again. They'll use the same technique. Exactly. The IRS, he says, does not spend nearly enough effort tracking this sort of crime before it happens to prevent it from happening in the first place.
Which really, when you think about it, that should be their main focus, because if they want to audit people for irregulars on their taxes, that takes a long process. Go ahead and get these guys first.
Well, that brings me to my next point. You know, it would be nice if the IRS focused on things like this, which actually protect American citizens rather than persecute American citizens, which is what they seem to have spent a great deal of time and effort doing. Thank you, Lois Lerner, with these whole controversy and scandal over the skewed review process for these 501c4 and other charitable organizations.
And then let the wolves into the chicken coop with Elijah Cummings.
Exactly. Yeah, Elijah, you know, we told you that there were senators, there have been presidents who've used the IRS, you know, for political witch hunts, if you will. And turns out Elijah Cummings, you know, who tried to play the victim here a few weeks ago to Terrell Issa's mean, nasty racistness. And turns out he was one who was also trying to use the IRS to go after his political enemies. So shock and you know, shock and all, right?
He was in on it.
That's right, you know. And then there was this. The IRS has reported that because of budget cutbacks, they've had to lay off agents, and they're not auditing nearly as many people as they used to. Now, if you can find me one single IRS agent who has been laid off, okay, I will prepare your taxes for the next 5 years for nothing.
What about all these massive hirings that they were doing for that very purpose?
That was all about Obamacare. And so it's the whole point of all this is that the IRS's priorities are all screwed up. And it's part because of the mandates they're given from on high, the executive branch, that is. And part of it is it's just a whole totally screwed up process, the way we go about assessing and collecting taxes. Need to do away with all this. You can go to a much more simpler system, be it a fair tax or a flat tax, that would be far more efficient, far less rampant fraud, far more fairness. But hey,
that makes it not just a redistribution
of wealth. All right. Stick around, folks. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Captain Jeff Strucker, author of the book, The Road to Unafraid.
It's political, professional wrestling at its finest. The American Adversaries.
Welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You are listening to the American Adversaries in Drive Time this wet Tuesday afternoon. So please be careful. Allow yourself a little bit of extra time if you have to go out on the roads tonight. Not supposed to rain anymore, but there's still some water standing around out there. That's right, folks. We're the American Adversaries in Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer, coming to you live from the Mercury Free Studios. I am Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams. We're live in the studio with you, and we have a special guest on the phone with us. Tremendous opportunity to meet this man just a few weeks ago, as I was telling you earlier, at the OS 91 annual tribute dinner. And I got his book there that day, and I read it, and I must say I was a bit surprised because the man is a highly decorated combat hero. As I was telling you earlier, he saw action in Panama. He saw action, of course, in Somalia. He saw action in Iraq twice, two different times, 10 years apart, if you will. He saw 13 years apart. He saw action in Afghanistan. And the name of his book is The Road to Unafraid. And I thought that it was going to be that combat action that took him to where he was in a state of, if you will, being unafraid. But it wasn't that at all. It was something that happened to him as a child. So I'm going to let him tell you the story. His name is Captain Jeff Strucker. Thanks so very much for being on the show with us today, Captain Strucker.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
It's an honor to have you, and thanks so very much for the life that you have spent in sacrifice to this country and protecting our freedoms literally all over the world.
That was my honor to do it.
Well, you did it well. And now you're a pastor at a church in Columbus, Georgia.
That's right, yeah. I'm a co-pastor of Calvary Baptist Church in Columbus, Georgia.
And you had become, before you left the Army, you had become a chaplain while you were in the Army, correct?
Yes, my last 10 years of the Army I spent as an active duty chaplain.
And that was not something that you joined the Army to be. That was something that was a life's path that you sort of found sitting on a cot, as I read the book, in Somalia.
Yes, I could have never imagined that I would have ended up as a chaplain or as a pastor. And Somalia kind of was a pivotal event for me. Though if you would have told me before Somalia, I would have laughed in your face that I was going to be a chaplain.
Yeah. And your dear friend and your commanding officer at that time, Colonel Danny McKnight's a regular on our show, and he speaks extremely highly of you and the heroism that you guys exhibited during that whole Black Hawk Down incident, which, by the way, was a successful mission, as we know from talking to Colonel McKnight. A successful but costly mission. But I want to go back, kind of back to the first part of your book, and then we'll work up to that, because I think that's kind of the culmination of things in a sort of way. When you were a child, you experienced something that I experienced, and I've never really talked to anyone about it. And that is that when I was a little kid, one of my uncles died. I was a very young age, and I remember seeing him in the coffin thinking, what did they do with the bottom half of him? Right? Because I can only see the top half of it. But it set me to thinking, and I became very aware of death and dying and very afraid of it. You had the same experience.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really have somebody close to me die when I was young, but and I don't remember how far back this started, but my earliest memories were I knew I was going to die. And it really terrified me what happens after you die. And I think I struggled with that for 5, 6, 8 years, probably off and on every night or every other night, thinking, laying in the bed, thinking about that.
And like me, I mean, it was like I was sort of reading a bit about my childhood, because like me, during the daytime, everything was cool. Mm-hmm. But at night, that's when mm-hmm. the feelings would come in.
Right.
And a lot of times I would sneak in bed with mom and dad. I'd be so afraid I couldn't sleep by myself. And, you know, my room with my brother, I had to go sleep in the bed with them. And fortunately, my dad would understand. And my dad oftentimes would sing me lullabies. They weren't really lullabies, but they were songs that would put me to sleep. But so I really had trouble dealing with it. And I didn't really, be honest with you, come to grips with it until I was a young man. But you had an experience with some of your neighbors that kind of helped you out.
Yeah, so I got up in the middle of the night like you. I woke my family up, but I asked them all the exact same questions that I'd asked them 100 times before, and they gave me the exact same answers. And it was basically, where do you go after you die, and what's it like? And they kept saying, will you go to heaven, Jeff? And I said, well, what's heaven like? And nobody could really give me a good answer about that. But really, then I would ask them, who gets to heaven? And the general answer that I got from my family was everybody goes to heaven. And until I became 13 years old, that didn't give me any peace, but that was what my friends and my neighbors or my family were telling me.
Well, Captain, go ahead, sir.
No, it's all right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Captain Stryker, Larry Adams here. I remember reading an article from a very famous child psychologist, and he equated the very same thing. He would ask children, draw me a picture of hell. And every kid could draw flames and bad stuff and everything else. And then he'd say, draw me a picture of heaven, and none of the kids can do it. He did the same experiment with adults and had the same exact results.
How fascinating. Yeah.
But you were asking these questions of your family.
So I kept asking these questions, and I really didn't feel like, I mean, they were doing their best to try to give me the real answers that I was looking for, but none of those answers really settled me in my heart and in my soul. So one day, my next-door neighbors came by to talk to me. They were very good Christian people. I hung out with them a lot, but I remember they were quite anxious when they came to sit down and talk to me. And it was just me at the house. Most of my family was gone that night. So they started explaining to me about Jesus, and they started telling me what sin was. I was 13 years old at the time. And then they made a statement, and there's no way they could have known this, but they said, Jeff, if you surrender your soul to Jesus, he not only handles what happens to you here on earth, but he secures forever what will happen to you after you die. He gives you eternal life. And they didn't twist my arm or anything else like that. They just said, this is between you and him, and if you're serious about this, you need to pray and you need to turn your soul over to Jesus. And I've had a chance to tell lots of audiences this part of the story, but later on that night, I thought hard about what they said. I knelt by the side of my bed. I prayed. I asked Jesus to forgive my sins. I asked him to give me eternal life. And then when I woke up the next morning, I knew in my heart there was something different. And the next day, I never really thought about death, never feared death again until Somalia. many years later.
And you had been to Panama. You had seen action in Panama. But then when you got to Somalia, it was the Black Hawk Down incident that was a turning point in your life.
That's right. I was in the invasion of Panama. I was there before, really the night before the invasion started. I was in Desert Storm. I was in firefights in both of those, but I never saw those firefights as, okay, all of us are going to die in the next few minutes. There's no way we're going to survive. But that's kind of the way I viewed the events of Somalia. That's probably why that combat experience, more than anything else, God used to change my future.
Yeah. And by the way, I think it was ABC last year on the 20th anniversary that did a special that had you, and you went back to Somalia, and it was kind of tough for you.
That's right. Kenny Thomas and I, who was a very close friend and a member from Task Force Ranger with me 20 years ago, we went back last April, and Somalia was first disappointing. I had hoped that the country would be doing better, you know, given how much of the U.S. and the U.S. military and the United Nations have invested in that country, but it's worse.
It's worse. Listen, Jeff, if you'll hold that thought, when we come back from the break, we'll pick up where we left off. There's so much more to talk about, but we have to take this hard break.
Sounds good.
Okay. Folks, when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Captain Jeff Strucker, author of The Road to Unafraid. It's a great book. I suggest you get a copy.
Here is tonight's American Adversary SoundbiteRx.com News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Tonight's SoundbiteRx.com News Minute is being brought to you by Lake Mary Jewelers. For that special gift, for that special someone, go to Lake Mary Jewelers at the intersection of Lake Mary Boulevard and Lake Emma Road. Call them today, 407-878-6230.
Hi, this is Chris Hart for SoundbiteRx.com. Let me just give you a little sample of what went up on SoundbiteRx.com today. More on the BLM standoff out there in Nevada, and more about Harry Reid and his involvement in the whole thing. And have you ever heard of Rory Reid? Rory Reid is Dirty Harry Reid's oldest son, and they are tied up with some pretty shady characters out in Clark County in Nevada. And if you want to find out, have a little better understanding of what's going on, you'll go to SoundbiteRx.com. Did you know there's another problem with the BLM? And that's the Bureau of Land Management. This time it's in Utah. Horses. Way too many horses. They don't know what to do with them. You need a horse? They got a horse. Of course, of course. And there's this. There's a lot more happening in Ukraine. That situation is deteriorating even further. And now the Ukrainian president is threatening Russia. And then there's it. This. The Obamacare rate hikes are getting ready to be announced soon for next year. There's speculation they'll be huge. There's speculation they won't be so big. But there is no speculation. They will be there. Rate hikes. That's right. And there's this. It's an intriguing story about Pakistan. This author asserts that Pakistan all along has really been behind the Taliban. And in that sense, they are really our enemy and not, say, Afghanistan. She alleges that they harbored and knowingly harbored Osama bin Laden and now maybe knowingly harboring Ayman al-Zawahiri. It's a fantastic story you'll only find on SoundbiteRx.com. And the IRS, once again, their computer systems, they can't even figure them out. They had to hire Microsoft to come in and help them with their computers. So what else is new? The IRS doesn't know what it's doing. Ooh. Did I really say that? No, I didn't. The IRS is a great organization, as is SoundbiteRx.com. Go there, folks. It's good medicine. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I took on the Iron Sheik from Iran. I took on Nikolai Volkov from the USSR. I took on Andre the Giant from France. I just want you to know, time for more political mayhem with the American adversaries. Tough guy, how about a ho?
And away we go on this wet but nonetheless beautiful Tuesday afternoon here in Central Florida. The American Adversaries Drive Time is who we are on AM 660. The answer is where we are. And we invite you to be a part of the show. 407-774-8255. Christopher Hart, Lair Adams in the studio. Nostra Dennis, our executive producer, is on the line. And also our guest is on the line with us as well. This man has gone from his first calling in life was as a warrior, and his second calling in life is as a man of the cloth. And it's a fascinating journey how he got from point A to point B, so to speak. We're talking with Captain Jeff Strucker, a former Ranger of the Year, by the way. Not only were you an Army Ranger, Jeff, but you made Ranger of the Year. No small achievement in that.
Thank you.
All right. Now, we were talking before the break about the Somalia incident and how you had been in action before in both Panama and Operation Desert Storm or Iraqi Freedom. And you had seen, you know, bullets flying around and explosions, but it was nothing like Somalia.
Yeah. Well, the thing, I think one of the things that's definitely different about Somalia than the other combat tours that I've done, Iraq and Afghanistan after Somalia and then Desert Storm and Panama before, is there was so many people. We were in Task Force Ranger, went to the capital city, Mogadishu. There were so many people in that city that were literally starving to death, but more than willing to kill each other over some food and rice, over some beans and rice. And when it came to, you know, allowing the United Nations and the United States to do our thing in the city, most of the people of the city didn't mind us being there. But, of course, the warlord Mohammed Farah ID'd and his clan did. And so we went there to just remove ID'd from power.
Yeah. And that day, you guys were after two of his main lieutenants who you brought back. You did capture along with a number of other Somali fighters. But, of course, the Black Hawks went down. You were charged with taking Ranger Blackburn. It's Blackburn.
That's correct.
Blackburn, yeah, you were charged with taking him back because he had, for whatever reason, missed the rope or perhaps had taken a bullet to his plate, chest plate, but he didn't get the rope as he was rappelling down and had fallen on his head into some 70 feet into the street. And you guys had to get him out of there, and you had to get him out of there fast. And it was like a gauntlet.
Yeah, so exactly like you described it, when we left the target building, only having been there for about 5 minutes, really, to take Todd Blackburn back to our base, I drove down a narrow alleyway and then turned onto one of the only major roads in Mogadishu. And that whole city, it seemed to me like that whole city erupted with gunfire. We were probably, I was in this little three-vehicle convoy, and we were probably being shot at from about 1,000 different enemy fighters at the same time over the course of just a few city blocks, and most of it was from 20 feet away. So a number of my men were hit in that exchange of gunfire. One of them, Dominic Pilla, was killed instantly,
And
we just barely made it back, limped back in those vehicles to our base.
And, of course, you guys were returning fire. You were firing out your window. The guy with the 50 cal on top was firing. I mean, it really was, you know, the worst of a firefight. And you guys came out of it, though. You got through. You did lose Sergeant Pila.
Right. So I tell people, you know, if you're familiar with the movie Black Hawk Down, it's a very accurate movie. But the violence that you see in Black Hawk Down, and it's an incredibly violent movie, it's only a fraction of what really happened.
Ooh, that's scary.
And there were more guns and more enemy fighters there in one little concentrated area than anywhere I've ever been in my life.
And you got Blackburn back to base. You got him in the hands of the medics. Of course, you lost Sergeant Pila.
Mm-hmm.
And then you found out you guys had to go back out. You had to go back into that.
As soon as we arrived back in the base, what I didn't realize, because I was trying to talk to our command center on a medical frequency, and I didn't hear what was happening on the other frequencies of our radios. And what I didn't realize is two helicopters had been shot down. We had already put our kind of reserve forces in on the first helicopter crash. And as soon as I got back, my boss was waiting to tell me, Jeff, you need to turn right back around. You need to go back out to the second crash site. And of course, I was thinking, well, we just barely survived with our lives. If I go back out there, all of my men are going to get killed. And that's when the fear of death that we talked about just before the break, that's when the fear of death started to kick back in for just a second. But I also realized I'm a warrior and an American soldier, and my country's asking me to do something, and I don't have a choice. For the sake of those men that are still in the city streets, I've got to turn around and go back out there.
Captain, please, sir, I do not mean to be rude in any way by asking this question. Afterwards, or in your life, have you been treated for PTSD?
No, thanks for asking. I've been asked this question many, many times. Truthfully, I have never struggled with it, and I can only credit my strong Christian faith for that. But I've not lost a night of sleep over what I saw or what I did in Somalia.
Yeah, and you describe in the book how before you guys could go back out, you had to clean out the vehicle from Sergeant Pila's wound.
Yeah, the most, in my opinion, the most terrifying moments of my life was cleaning the back of the Humvee from all of the blood and the wounds that Dominic Pila sustained,
yeah.
And then getting ready to turn back around and return right back to the Mike Durant crash site.
Yeah.
And I was convinced, well, first of all, I was a leader, and I had 10 men that I was responsible for, and I was convinced every one of my men are going to die, and I was convinced I'm going to leave my wife a widow, and she's pregnant with our baby, and that baby's never going to know who their father is.
And yet you went back out there again, and you guys went and you took care of business, and you came back. We did lose 6 Rangers. Eventually, those bodies were turned back over to the United States. But something that happened when you guys got back to base, and it was all said and done, and you were sitting on your cot. Now, you had been known. In other words, all the other guys knew you were a staunch Christian, correct?
That's right, yeah. I didn't hide the fact that I was a passionate follower of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was a Ranger sergeant, I was a strongly committed Christian at the same time.
Yeah, and this, they didn't subject you to ridicule, but they did. It did kind of set you apart in some sense from some of the guys. In other words, you know, don't ask Jeff to go out drinking because he's a Christian. Some of the guys might have thought you were a little bit soft. But when all that action was over, it was you who they came to see.
Yeah, there was, you know, I spent the whole night out there until 9 o'clock the next morning. And just as you described it, when I came back, there were a lot of guys that were waiting to talk to me. And many of them, over the course of the next 24 hours, were just, they would wake me up waiting to ask me questions. And here's what's crazy about it. They were asking me questions about life and death. They were saying, Jeff, what happened to my best friend who just died? Where is he? And what happens to me if I die? And I was thinking, man, I went through all these questions 15 years ago, and I settled these questions when I settled forever my eternity with Jesus. So I had a chance to talk to a lot of my friends about my faith in Jesus that next day. And I tell people all the time, I can take you to the exact spot. It was on an airfield in Mogadishu at this little cot, this little army cot that I was sitting at, where I felt this overwhelming conviction that God was calling me into the ministry.
And eventually you went back and you told a Ranger chaplain back here in the States that's what you wanted to do, about knocked him out of his chair.
Right.
But he set you on the path to do it, and you did it.
That's right, yeah. I loved the last 10 years. I loved serving as a chaplain. I spent most of those last 10 years chaplain to the Army Rangers and deployed a whole lot of times with them.
That's fabulous, sir. Listen, we have to go to our producer, Nusser Dennis, as a question for you, but a real quick question. Mm-hmm. Jeff, who played you in the movie?
Brian Van Holt.
Brian Van Holt?
Yeah. He's a lot better looking than I am in real life, so it's cool with me.
I don't know.
Well,
you look pretty sharp in that uniform that day, I'll say that.
Well, the next time I watch the film, I'm going to watch for him.
By the way, Jeff, can people get your book on Amazon?
Sure, yeah. They can go to any of the online stores, or, you know, they can get it directly from my website, jeffstrucker.com.
And you spell Strucker, Strucker. That's jeffstrucker.com. The Road to Unafraid. It's a great book, an absolutely inspiring book everybody needs to read. Nusser Dennis.
Yeah, or you can go to our American Adversaries Facebook page, like us if you haven't, and the most recent post has a link directly to jeffstrucker.com. You can see all about him, and you can order all of his books if you'd like.
Thank you.
Question for you, Captain Strucker. First,
yes, sir.
Thank you so much, for your for helping defend the freedom of this nation, and second, for standing up so unabashedly and unashamedly for your Christian faith. I think a lot of Christians could use you as an example.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.
My question is this. Lair was going to ask what I was going to ask about the PTSD. How do you help people returning from theaters of combat like Iraq, like Afghanistan, cope with PTSD if they don't have the kind of faith and the kind of strength that you've got?
Thanks for asking that question, because that's probably, I think I've told a lot of men this in general, especially warriors. I consider myself a subject matter expert on only two things in the world, fear and death. And maybe I get the guys who've been to combat and seen a lot of killing, done a lot of killing better than most, because I was one of those guys myself before I became a chaplain. And generally speaking, the guys who are talking to me, and I have lots and lots of people that contact me about PTSD, they're generally asking this question, Jeff, how do I go back to being the person that I was before I went to combat? And the hard, ugly truth is you don't go back to that person. But you can learn, and this is a long process, and it takes me a long time to answer this question. But I tell them you can learn to become a normal, healthy, functioning human being again. It just takes some time. And certainly the framework of faith helps in that process, but it doesn't mean that somebody will never get PTSD, nor does the guy who doesn't have any faith necessarily more subjected to PTSD. The truth is, when guys ask, how do I go back to being the person that I was before, I tell them, you don't. That's something that you'll carry with you to your grave.
And then how does a family deal with that? Because the man that's coming home or the woman that's coming home is not the same as the one that left them.
Here's the truth. The country asks something terrible and something overwhelming of warriors and their families. And I believe we owe it to them for the rest of their lives to be there for them, because they were there for us. And many military families are saying, hey, this is not the man that I married. He's totally different now. And they're asking, how do I adjust to that? So just last year, our church sponsored this conference called Hope Beyond the Battle. And it was for wives who are married to warriors who said, my husband's different, and I don't even know how to live with him anymore. And it's a tough, complex issue, but the truth is there are resources out there for families that are in that boat, too.
What more can we do as a nation that we're already doing to fulfill that promise we made to our fighting men?
Every warrior in America needs two things. They need first to hear from their country, thank you, we're proud of you. Shame on us as a country for what we did to the Vietnam generation, and I hope we never do something like that again. So every warrior needs to hear that. But secondly, every warrior needs to hear, hey, we're here for you, and we're praying for you. And many of them, it's not money or physical or financial gifts or anything else like that. Just to hear, I'm proud of you and I'm praying for you, is what most warriors need. Jeff, and any American could do that, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're right, sir.
Absolutely. Jeff, I just want to go back to your book just for one more time, because you talk in there where you were watching TV one night and you saw where Barbara Walters was interviewing Larry King. And Barbara asked him, what's your greatest fear? And Larry King, you say, did not flinch. Immediately he gave a one-word answer with all seriousness, death. Mm-hmm. He did not say, my show might get canceled or something like that. He said death. And then she asked him, do you believe in God? And he answered, not sure. I'm an agnostic, don't know. Then you write, and I'd like to read these couple paragraphs.
Sure.
As soon as I heard that, I thought, the two answers fit together, don't they? To be uncertain about the reality of God leaves a big problem when it comes to death. It means being cast out into a void. You're not sure what or whom to grasp. But if we know there's a God and we've come to terms with him by accepting his offer of forgiveness and salvation, we have a certainty about what eternity holds. We know God is there already, and he will welcome us as one of his family. So, and this is the part I love. Sometimes I tell soldiers, I don't have a bulletproof body, but I do have a bulletproof faith. I have a belief that transcends death. No matter what happens to me here in Iraq or wherever the Army sends me, I'm guaranteed an eternity in heaven. And that's what you had come to grips to as a young man, and that's what you went back to in Somalia, and that's what you have now, and we can hear it in your voice. Lair told me during the break, he's a soft-spoken man. And I was thinking about it. It's not that you're a soft-spoken man. It's that you are a man at peace.
Yes.
I know who I am, and I know where I stand with my Creator. The truth is, the real reason that I wrote that book is because most people have it wrong. The opposite of fear is not courage. The opposite of fear is faith. fear basically says, I don't know what the future holds, and I'm scared of what the future may hold. And faith is the antidote to that. Faith says, I don't know what the future holds, but I know the one who holds my future. His name is Jesus, and I'm just going to trust him with it.
As a matter of fact, that question was put to you directly by one of your Army Rangers when you guys were told to go back into the streets of Mogadishu when he was expressing some reservations. And you told him, the difference between being a coward and hero is not whether you're scared, it's what you do while you're scared.
Yeah, he had the courage to say something to me that everybody was thinking, but nobody else had the willingness to say. And he was basically saying, I'm terrified and I can't go back out there. And I was saying, man, I know exactly what you're thinking because I am too. But the difference, as you just said, between fear and courage, it's not, or the difference between coward and courage is not fear. It's what you do when you are afraid.
Yeah, and I think you wrote also that, when you guys, you and one other, two other Rangers were cleaning the vehicle of Sergeant Pila's blood, you at some point found yourself at peace.
Yeah, so I came to the absolute conviction that only one of two things can happen to me. If I go back on the city streets, I'm more than likely going to die. And because I already know where I'm going to spend my eternity, I'm not worried about that. And if by some miracle I survive, I go back home to my family in Fort Benning, Georgia. So no matter what happens next, it's a no-lose situation for me.
Wow. Powerful, powerful story. The Road to Unafraid. Captain Jeff Strucker, folks, please get this book. You'll be happy that you did. Give it to a person in your life, you know, who needs a little encouragement or who needs to know, you know, about God. Or that person in your life who's already devout. They will so very much appreciate this book, The Road to Unafraid. Nostradamus, before I have to let Jeff go.
All I can say is God bless you for what you've done and for what you're continuing to do.
Thank you, Bill.
And Columbus, Georgia. Are you from Columbus? Is that how you ended up there?
You know, Fort Benning, Georgia is right outside of Columbus, and
right.
I spent almost my entire Army career here. So my wife and I fell in love with this place and just wanted to stay here after we retired.
All right. Well, it's a great place. My family's from that area up there, and so all the luck to you, and you are in the right place. I mean, you always kind of have been, but God has really led your life in an extraordinary fashion. Jeff, it's a great story, and I hope we can talk with you again in the future.
Sounds great.
All right. God bless you, and have a great day.
And we'll see you.
All right. Okay, folks, don't forget, please get the book, The Road to Unafraid. Like Dennis said, go to our Facebook page. Like us if you haven't already. Take your direct link to Amazon. Go to Amazon. Go to Barnes & Noble. Get the book.
And like Chris said, too, let's face it. We get some, you know, when we get a chance to interview a hero, I think that's the best thing we can do on the show. This man's a real hero. However, we do have some people that also are rather heroic in what they do. They've been trying to give people some type of a solution for skin ailments, any kind of a skin ailment, especially the elderly. I've got a 96-year-old mother, and she has skin problems. You drop a feather on her, and it bruises her. And Mike and Sarah from Alabama, they've been working in nursing homes, and they've been wishing they had this years ago. They use it on all of the patients. Folks, please get a hold of some Roxy Pacifics. You will not be sorry, and you will order more. 619-654-4829. Any kind of a skin condition. That's Roxy, R-O-C. Z-E-Y, Pacifics, PACIFIX.net.
This is Sunny, the California girl, and I've been around a lot of big, hunky, sexy, tough men. I like men like that, but only when they're brainy, like the American adversary. These guys are sexy and smart.
And we're back, and we are live. We'll be here with you for the next few minutes, and then Gary Kultbaum takes over. Once again, the roads are wet, so allow yourselves a little extra time. And that was a fascinating interview. He's a fascinating man. It was a great pleasure to talk to him a few weeks ago, even greater pleasure to talk to him after I'd read his book, The Road to Unafraid. Captain Jeff Strucker, please get the book.
And you feel the power from this man, as soft-spoken as he is.
He's the kind of guy you want to have as a pastor of your church. Let's put it that way. All right, let's go to Nostradamus. Nostradamus, it's tax day. Have you got yours in yet?
Oh, mine were in a long, long time ago. My tax guy is great. Me and my wife actually got a little refund, and it's already in the bank.
Hot.
We're happy.
Hot diggity dog. Did you take any deductions?
We took several, but, you know, it's very, it's a good thing to laugh and to smile on April 15th. And so what I did was I started reading this story about things people try to write off as deductions and whether their tax preparers go along with it or not. You ready for a couple of good ones?
I'm sure I've heard a few of these myself, but go ahead, yeah.
Okay. The extra big suit. Okay, this was for, well, because of a pianist, a concert pianist, who has to move back and forth between multiple keyboards and lots of pedals to perform. He decided to get a suit tailored so the pant legs and sleeves were 6 inches longer. He couldn't wear them in the street. He could only wear them when performing. So his tax preparer said, yes, you can call this an allowable business deduction.
I would have said yes.
Yeah.
One taxpayer decided to write off a multi-year globe-trotting extravaganza. He went around the world, Italy, France, Greece, spent $50,000. And he could do it because he wrote a book about his travels. Now, the book was in one of those little vanity press places. He only sold 20 copies, but he was allowed to count it as a business expense.
Wow.
I remember that one.
A police officer was able to successfully write off all of his snitch fees, paying informants for tips, because that's the only way he could get some of the information he needed.
I'm all for that.
I thought the police force covered that, but apparently this cop decided to pay out of his own money.
That's what I thought. I thought it was like an expense form you turned in. I wonder if that's still held true for those detectives, if you want to call them that, out there in Hawaii. You know, the ones who had to have sex with the prostitutes. And never mind.
Well, I'll be honest with you guys. Believe it or not, I know a lady. I never saw her perform, but I know a lady who was a stripper, and she wrote off her boa constrictor and the care of the boa constrictor because she used them in her act.
All right. All right. Great work, Nostradamus. We'll talk
she
to you.
She had to cover up with something, Chris.
All right. The IRS, they see it all. All right. We tell all around here. And we'll be back tomorrow night with Abe Katzman and the actor producer from the movie God's Not Dead.
She was wearing snake skin. The snake in it.
Night, everybody.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando, a service of Salem.